NetFront Presence is brought to you by Closets by Design. Update your closet, garage, office, pantry, and more. Imagine your home totally organized. Call 1-800-BY-DESIGN. That's 1-800-BY-DESIGN.
Welcome to NetFront Presence. I'm Jeff Gordon of the Post-Dispatch, joined by our beat reporter, Matthew DeFranks. And man, I tell you what, it was a pretty terrifying time there for a minute down at Enterprise Center, Matt. And, you know, Blues fans have seen some things happen over the years, most recently with Jay Bouwmeester. So for a bit, that was nerve-wracking to see what happened to Dylan Holloway.
Yeah, and, you know, in hindsight, good to see that he's okay, and you can look back at this and look back at it not as a life-threatening situation, right? Which, you know, obviously the Jay Bouwmeester situation was, and I'm sure a lot of people in the building, a lot of people watching on TV, a lot of the players on the Blues bench probably had flashbacks to that moment where some panic sets in on the bench when you have a guy who is not acting normally, right? And for Holloway, he's fine now. He was back at the practice facility yesterday, was not on the ice yesterday, was on the ice this morning for optional Blues morning skate, and officially a game time decision. But the way that Holloway described it was he was hit in the neck with a puck, obviously, in his vagus nerve, V-A-G-U-S. And after doing a little bit of research, it turns out the vagus nerve controls blood pressure and heart pressure, and when it's stimulated, it can cause your blood pressure to drop and a lack of oxygen to flow to your brain, and then you end up passing out or blacking out, whatever the correct medical term would be. And you know, Holloway didn't remember the last half of his shift. He thought he went on the 2-on-1 and he passed it up to Suter at the point, and then he thought he went to the bench, but there was another half of it where he circles back in his zone, goes back in to get the puck, and then dishes it off and then goes to the bench. And he said, you know, once he got to the bench, he was woozy. He told Ray he didn't feel well. And then next thing you know, he was on a stretcher next to an ambulance. He didn't even know that the game had stopped. He doesn't remember really being on the bench much at all. And so really scary situation, but one of those things where I think it just got him in the wrong spot, and he's going to be okay. He was cleared. You know, they said, 24 hours to do strenuous activity. And so that was the day yesterday where he had off. And then this morning he's on the ice and officially a game time decision, but it looks like he could play against Utah, but regardless of the nightly outcome today, obviously really great news to see him just doing fine.
It kind of reminded me in retrospect of, in a way, of what happened to Chris Pronger. He was in Detroit. I was at that game, and his parents were at that game. And the puck was not shot hard at Chris in that particular incident, but it hit him just wrong. And it kind of reminded me, because the puck wasn't blasted into the neck of Holloway. It just hit him wrong. And, yeah, suddenly you're on the bench, and you're suddenly losing it, man. And your teammates are like, uh-oh, this is – in the moment, man, I was thinking, maybe it was an artery or something that somehow they were, you're afraid of, obviously wasn't cut, but maybe there was some sort of a problem. So, boy, for a lot of people, it was unsettling. And for the team to regroup as quickly as it did after being told that he was okay, that was a pretty impressive show by the team to go back out and play the way they did against a very good opponent.
Yeah, and honestly, good on the officials to make that call in the moment to send the teams to the dressing room. I mean, you see it every now and then with an on-ice delay where they have to replace a pane of glass, or, there's a big old divot in the ice that they need some time to fix, and it's towards the end of a period, and officials will send them off the ice. They'll say they'll finish that minute and 11 seconds after your intermission, right before switching sides for the second. And smart move by the officials just to get that done and to get the teams in 18 minutes to settle down, get a mental break. During that time, the Blues did find out that he was alert and stable. And so they kind of had that bit of news coming back out for the second period. And in the second intermission before the third period, that's when Doug Armstrong went to the Blues dressing room and gave him a further update on what was going on with Holloway. And so they had more of a peace of mind, I guess, about what was happening with him, that it wasn't a life-threatening situation, that he was going to be fine, that he was alert, responsive, all those things. And, you know, in that situation, yeah, the last thing you want to be doing is thinking about hockey. I mean, just as onlookers, you kind of wonder how a game continues after that when you don't know what the outcome is, right? I mean, when you have situations like Pronger or Jay Bouwmeester or even you know, Rich Peverly, he had a similar heart thing happen on the bench. Like, those are legitimately life and death situations, and it's not. And obviously, this wasn't that case, but it's scary in the moment when you don't know what's happening.
Of course, the Blues were involved in, perhaps the worst incident on ice in the NHL with Clint Malarchuk getting his neck slashed. And they had to sew him up under the stands quickly, or else he wouldn't have made it. And other players have had that type of injury and have not made it when there was not a doctor or surgeon immediately available to fix the player's injury. So,
And one thing on like on the neck guards, right? So Dylan Holloway was asked about, you know, what the impact of a potential neck guard would have been in that situation. And he didn't quite know what the answer would have been if he did have it. But just thinking about it, those are meant to protect against cuts. And they're generally kind of thin material. They're just material that protects against cuts. So I'm not sure what kind of impacts a neck guard like that would have had on just blunt force trauma, for lack of a better phrase, right? Just impacts to that area.
yeah, it's been an issue that so far the NHL players haven't been most haven't been very excited about it, mandated at lower levels, and it's something I'm sure at some point the NHL will come to terms with. Just keep making the game safer, keep making the game safer. Another situation that popped up that not as life not life threatening, but far more serious for the Blues, of course, was losing Philip Broberg, who gets tangled up with Mitch Marner, and at the in the moment that had every look of a season-ending injury. And so when he's told that it's a 4 to 6 week thing, and the fans are told it's 4 to 6 weeks, and the team says, "Well, that's better than we thought," that tells you how scary that situation was.
Yeah, and when it happens, like, I thought it looked a lot like the same play that Adam Juracek got injured on at the World Juniors last year, when you know, someone, it was basically along the board, someone fell on his leg, and it's odd coincidence that that someone happens to be a Juraj Pekarčík, Blues prospect, and now I guess future teammates with Juracek. But it had that same look when Marner fell on Broberg. It didn't have a good feeling. I mean, you could hear him scream in pain on the television broadcast. As soon as it happens, you can hear the on-ice mics pick up, you know, Philip Broberg's pain. So it didn't look, sounds good. You see the way he couldn't put any weight on it going off of the ice. None of that looked good. And, you know, yeah, you think it could be a season ender. Obviously, you don't know that in the moment. You don't know much about anything. I'm not a doctor, I'm not an athletic trainer. And then you get the news that it's 4 to 6 weeks. And even then, you know, when Drew Bannister is asked about, hey, like, is that, you know, a good outcome? He's like, well, I guess compared to losing it for the season, yes, but it's still 4 to 6 weeks that you're without you know, your best performing defenseman of the year, short sample size and everything. But, you know, when you don't have Robert Thomas for another about 4 weeks, you're missing Broberg for 4 to 6. You haven't had Letty for close to a month now. Obviously, you know, they addressed the Torrey Krug injury during the summer, but that's still someone you don't have. You have had injuries that have come and gone to Kapanen, Joseph, Texier, Torpchenko, Sundqvist. Like, that's a lot of things that add up. And you know, this is a big one because of how well Broberg had been playing at the time.
Of course, this forces the team to continue to make adjustments as it had to do, as you point out, all year. And two guys that have spent time as healthy scratches are now important. P.O. Joseph not only is in the lineup, but he moves up in the lineup, takes on a bigger role. And it's the seldom seen Scott Perunovic is now a factor as well. And both guys, I'm sure, are glad to have that opportunity. Both guys in the age group where, if they do play well, if they can turn the corner in in the case of Prunovich, or reestablish himself in the case of Joseph. That's a good thing, but man, you're asking a lot of guys that, again, who were in and out of the lineup, and in Scott's case, mostly out.
Yeah, and the thing with P.O. Joseph that, you know, I think is lost sometimes is that, you know, this was a guy who was playing relatively big minutes in Pittsburgh towards the end of last year. He played on a pairing with Chris Letang for the last 14 to 16 games of the season, I want to say. I went back and counted them up, but I forget the number right now. And so this is someone who has played, you know, high leverage minutes, played with an offensive guy. You know, when you look at Letang, obviously a little bit more offensive tilted than a guy like Justin Falk is. But, you know, those are top 4 minutes on a team in the NHL. And so it's not like he hasn't done this before. It's just that we haven't seen him do it in St. Louis, right? And he played 23 minutes the other night when we talked to Drew Bannister yesterday after practice. He mentions that he likes you know, what P.O. Joseph brought to the game. And he'll get another chance to show that again tonight with Justin Falk. And so, you know, I think Joseph himself was a little bit disappointed with how he started the season. The Blues liked his camp. I don't think Joseph or really anyone really liked his game in Vegas. He kind of came on a little bit more where you could see his length, you could see his skating, his defending, and his willingness to shoot the puck at really every opportunity. Whenever that puck comes to the point, it is getting towards the net. Not always on the net, but he's looking to shoot pretty often. And so, you know, the Blues liked what he brought on Tuesday, and we'll kind of see what he continues to do in the future. Because in the NHL at this level, you know, these guys are able to do that on a one or two game basis. Like everyone is skilled enough, talented enough to do that in spot duty, but it's the consistency of doing it night in, night out, continually doing that. And that's kind of the challenge that P.O. Joseph has right now.
And for Scott Perunovich, just getting on the ice and trying to avoid disaster on one hand and contribute some offense, which is badly needed for a team that's lost a lot of ability up front. An interesting time for him. You know, he and Kessel got caught out there too long against the wrong people and had a bad shift. Interesting that Binnington went up to the both of them and, you know, apparently was more positive than negative in his comments and during the game, and you know, tell him to keep going. And you know, they did. They finished out the game. Kessel ends up setting up a goal by putting a shot on goal, and they got through the game with those two. But this is going to be interesting and quite a challenge for both.
Yeah, and you know they're going to give Scott Perunovich a little bit more opportunity now. I mean, they juggled the power play units again yesterday during practice, and Perunovich was running the first unit. He's at the top of that quarterbacking that unit as Justin Falk moves to his one-timer spot in the left circle. So that's an area where if the Blues are going to have success with Scott Perunovich, he's going to have to produce there. He's going to have to produce momentum, goals, points, whatever it ends up being. That power play has to get going, and they're giving him an opportunity to do so. And, you know, that's always been his thing, right? He has run a power play, and he hasn't done it all that dynamically, on a consistent level in the NHL. And, you know, a lot of that probably has to do with a willingness to shoot the puck. We always see him kind of passing up shots or not getting pucks towards the net, getting action there and creating scrambles when you have you know, more numbers on the ice. So I think that's something that the Blues will ask for him and to just for the unit to attack more. And you know, we'll see what happens. But that is a change, and that's something he's gonna get a lot of opportunity with.
And this team 5-on-5 is not dynamic. It needs him to, well, survive at the defensive end, but you know, to make some outlet passes, step in a bit as a playmaker, and contribute something there too. Because you, again, you know, you're down offensively right now. It's not been easy for this team to generate offense, and that's his plus. And beyond the power play, he could also help himself with some even strength production.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like he's going to be Philip Broberg, but the fact that he can help move pucks out of your own ends, that's a skill that Broberg obviously has. So it's an area that Perunovic can help. You know, it's obviously you worry about him a little bit more defensively than when he has the puck on his stick.
Imagine your home totally organized. Closets by Design is offering 40% off plus an additional 15% and free installation. Schedule your free consultation today. Call 1-800-BY-DESIGN for details. That's 1-800-BY-DESIGN.
All right, looking at the at some other pluses and minuses, Jordan Kyrou gets a lucky break to end his goal scoring drought, but and also now scores a nice goal off to Rush. As you write, Drew Bannister pleased with the steps that he's taken with his overall game, but you know, with Robert Thomas gone, this team needs somebody to drive play, and they need and there aren't many guys that can drive play on this team. He's one of them, and he's got to drive play.
Yeah, and you know, I think he has done a decent job of creating offense, right? And there's a difference between creating offense and scoring goals. Like we understand this, that just because you hit a post doesn't mean you're not doing the right things to get in that situation. And you know, I think those were the signs that he was coming out of a slump in Philadelphia, where he hits two posts in the same shift. And you know, all of that is kind of undone and overshadowed when he has the turnover at the end of the game on the game-winning goal for the Flyers. So, like, that's a tough swing to navigate for him. But he had 9 shot attempts in Philly, had 10 shot attempts in against Montreal. So you could kind of see it coming before he did get that lucky bounce off of a Jake McCabe skate against the Maple Leafs. And it's one of those bounces that you get because you're putting pucks in the correct areas. You know, he wasn't shooting the puck there, but he was trying to find Braden Schenn driving the net at that point, and he gets a good bounce because you put it in the right areas, right? And so you might get a lucky bounce, but it's still creating offense the correct way. And you know, he will have his turnovers. He will have you know, maybe lapses every now and then, but when I talked to him, I think I mentioned this last week when we spoke, he mentioned that his overall game feels more normal right now. He doesn't have to think extra about doing the other things away from the puck, whether it's board paddles or being responsible defensively, boxing guys out, whatever that all entails. He feels like it's more normal, and it is something that you hope shows up in kind of play driving metrics, possession metrics, where the Blues are able to kind of tilt the ice while he's on the ice, especially because, as you mentioned, Robert Thomas is out for another about 4 weeks, I would say.
This team will need to get more depth scoring, and it's seen a bit of that. A guy who got an additional commitment from the franchise, Alexei Toropchenko, scores a nice goal off a good forecheck shift by that line. Radek Foxa doing a great job, continue to do a solid work as a Blue. So he's got a, you know, he's not going to score a ton, but he and Sundqvist and Tesche, these guys, they've got to contribute something. Everybody's got to, they're going to have to win some 2-to-1s and 3-to-2s if they're going to stay alive. And for Toropchenko, a nice goal, but two, I don't think we had a chance to discuss this, the additional commitment from the team. This is definitely a guy who can be a part of the group that goes forward. Beyond the next 2 years, obviously he'll need more another contract at that point, but still a guy they seem committed to.
Yeah. And so, he signed a 1-year extension at a $1.7 million. That'll take care of his contract for next year. And then after that, he will actually go to UFA. He'll be a UFA after that. He is 25 years old right now. So, you know, in a couple of years, he'll be 27, eligible to be an unrestricted free agent. And you know, we'll see what happens. I mean, that's according to Puckpedia. They have him listed as a UFA. So, yeah, I mean, he's a guy who you know what you're going to get from basically every night. In the last few seasons, he's chipped in around double-digit goals. And, you know, I think, you know, two nights ago now, was his first of the season. And it's not really what you want out of it. A guy that you already signed, that you already are paying, you know, a slight premium on, to be quite honest, for the role that he plays, and a slight premium next year, I'm saying at 1.7. So he's got his goal. Sundqvist got his goal. These are guys that, as you mentioned, you're going to need to provide some depth scoring in games when, you know, when you don't have Thomas, everyone else just kind of bumped up. And so you might have your normal secondary scores get tougher matchups, and then suddenly the trickle down effect happens to lower in the lineup, and those guys lower on need to kind of chip in to make up for maybe a lack of production from guys like Pavel Buchnevich, who have seen tougher matchups, who hasn't scored a 5-on-5 goal since Vegas, I want to say. So it's been almost a month since he scored an even strength goal. And, I'm sure part of that is tougher matchups. Part of that could be just adjusting more to center. But, when he's not going, you need other guys to get going. And, Sundqvist and Torpchenko provided that against Tampa.
Now, your guy Raddick, I like him. We know he's always been a sturdy player, not the greatest skater. He's kind of late. Well, he is late in his career, but he just sturdy and sturdy shifts. Strong on pucks when he can get there. Boy, a lot of again that play being persistent on the forecheck, resulting in a goal. Man, they yeah, I mean, again, he's getting paid a premium too as a salary dump, but so far so good.
Yeah, I mean the only reason he doesn't fit in Dallas is because he's making too much money, right? For what he provides at 3.25 million, it's a bit on the high side. I mean he's got one goal and one assist. I mean that one goal was against San Jose, part of that comeback, and then he had that assist the other night on the Torpchenko goal. But he's a good player that is making too much money essentially. And the Stars thought that they could replace him for cheaper, and they have with one of their own homegrown prospects. And Fats is another similar guy to Torpchenko, where what you're going to get out of him. You're going to get some, hard, heavy physical play. You're going to kill some penalties, and every now and then provide a good forechecking shift that leads to offense. So, yeah, not someone that you're going to be counting on to lead a power play unit, but someone who can provide useful attributes to a hockey team.
One of the issues this team has had with no Robert Thomas is the guy who plays in all situations is good on the draw. And, here you are trying to Pavel Buchnevich trying to make the transition to center. Dylan Holloway is a guy that's can play both spots, but Tesche can play both spots, but these face-off guys, you need to, it's one of those things you just have to have, and this is a team that's going to have to make do and be weak in the dot on the dot for some time.
Yeah, and I haven't historically really been a big, face-off guy as part of an integral part of a hockey team. I think there are other attributes that are more important than winning draws. Having said that, when you look at non-5-on-5 situations, they are paramount. Overtime, whoever wins that first face-off has possession of the puck for at least the first minute a lot of times. Power plays, obviously if you win the draw on a PK, you can get it down the ice, kill about 30 seconds, and suddenly a quarter of the power play is gone. And empty net situations, when you just can get it down the other end of the ice, doesn't matter if you ice it or not sometimes, but kill some time late in the game. Like those are important face-offs that you have, and they don't have anyone that they lean on, can lean on for big draws, and knowing that they have an advantage there. I think when I looked at their numbers the other day, Braden Schenn was the only one that is above 50%. I think Faxa is right at 50, and Sundqvist was one win away from being right at 50%. Thomas was 62, 63%, something like that. He was close to the lead in face-off win percentage. And having said all that, I mean, the Blues are, I think, 25th right now. I'm looking at it in overall faceoff percentage. I don't know what the numbers look like since Robert Thomas went out, but I'm sure when you put in, Buchnevich at 34%, you put in Holloway, who hasn't played a ton of center, it's probably not all that pretty.
Yeah, this is it's just a team that needs every edge to try to get through games. It's just one more thing that makes it difficult for this team
Yeah.
to try to get through all of these injuries and being shorthanded. So it's
And then
It's I you know, and so far, I don't know what more you could want from Drew Bannister at this point. I look around the league, and because other teams have struggled early, Nashville's been awful, Colorado's been disappointing over in the other division, Edmonton's been disappointing. They're just hanging in there, which is all things considered, it's early, but they're not dead yet. Your thoughts on how he's had to handle this constant churning of the roster due to all the injuries and now the significant losses, arguably the two guys other than Binnington or you know, even if you lose Binnington, you feel pretty good about Hofer. Man, he got losing Thomas and losing Broberg. I guess it could be worse. You could lose Parayko. But it's been pretty tough. Been pretty tough for Drew, and they've survived.
Yeah, and then quick note. I did look up how they rank in faceoff percentage since Thomas went out, and they are dead last in the league at 42.4%. So yeah,
Oof. Oof.
as with Drew Bannister, you know, I don't think they would ever say this publicly, but you'd have to think that expectations in the interim have changed a little bit. You when you're a fully healthy team, you have your number one center, when you have a top 4D, you can probably look at your overall goals and be saying, hey, we want to put ourselves in a playoff spot. We want to make the playoffs. We want to be in a good position to make a push in the second half with those guys in the lineup. You can judge your team completely and fully in those situations. But I think right now you have to look at it. You have to know what kind of roster you have on the ice, what kind of holes that you have in your lineup right now. And kind of treasure every point that you can get, you know, and not to say that they need to tread water, but knowing that this isn't a team that's going to be going out there favored in a lot of games. They're just not going to be. Talent-wise, they're not going to be on the positive side in a lot of matchups. And you know, not that Braden Schenn said this the other night either, but you know, he said, yeah, the way that we are constructed, we're not going to be tilting the ice for 60 minutes. And that's just something that is the truth. Like, they are not going to be dominating, manhandling teams across an entire game. So they have to do what they have done against the two Toronto games, the Tampa game, and kind of, you know, play a little tougher team game, do the little things, kind of keep shots to the outside, protect the middle ice, and hopefully it can win a 2-1 game or something like that, because it's definitely not going to be the same team without those two weapons that they have in injured.
And the plus side of all of this is that, again, or I don't know if it's a plus side, but the reality is this is all about building up over the next 2 years anyways, right? And so if through this process you find out more about P.O. Joseph to the point where he becomes part of your group and you commit to him, if somehow finally get Perunovic over the hump where he becomes a useful player and puts the skill to work, if Jake Neighbors grows out of necessity to, you know, because this team just needs him at another level than he's at right now. Offensively, they need him to produce. If these things do happen, then that's a positive. I mean, and you don't want to have to it to be accelerated that way. You know, there's a great column in on Sportsnet Justin Bourne wrote about how the league is more than ever before. It's a developmental league. Every team to a degree is just developing players at the NHL level just because of the salary cap. In the old days, you didn't develop players at the NHL level. Now everybody does to some degree. And now the Blues, to a larger degree, are having to use this time with these guys out to develop. And if it goes well, then at the end of the day, you're still going to get the goal met. And the goal is in 2 years to be ready, be good to go.
Yeah, I think there are parts that I agree with and parts that I don't. So I think the only guys that I would say that the Blues are developing in the NHL would be guys like Broberg and Holloway, where they were up and down last year, AHL, NHL, not really used a ton in the NHL. Like, they are changing their roles. They are giving them time and space to grow into those. Like, Broberg was up 9 minutes from what he was playing in Edmonton. And the Blues knew that he wouldn't necessarily grow into it immediately. And, you know, lucky for them that he had before he got injured. So I look at those guys and say, yes, like, those guys are being asked to develop in the NHL. But then I look at guys like, Dvorsky, who they are going to slow play him. They don't want to rush him. They want to make sure that he has a good long career. He doesn't get rushed to the NHL. So like he's a guy who's being allowed to develop in the AHL. And, the other thing with I guess the timeline of this rebuild, retool, retrench, whatever. Do you have another term? Is there any other one that I missed there? Retool, rebuild, retrench,
Revitalization,
revitalization. Yeah, breathe life back in, huh?
yeah.
Like, yes, the end goal is to not be competing for a Stanley Cup this year. They know that they're not doing that, but you can't go from a team that misses the playoff 3 years in a row to a cup contender in 1 year. It just doesn't happen. There has to be steps to it, right? So the Blues look at it and say, well, we missed the playoffs 2 years in a row. This next step might be making the playoff. Maybe the next step is winning the series. And then when you have more guys coming in and you have, the steps becoming more serious down the road. So yes, they know that they're not competing for a Stanley Cup here. That doesn't mean that the results this year don't matter to the whole timeline of the plan.
And they do have to sell tickets, and that could be a topic for another edition of the NetFront because we've run out of time this week. We got to let Matthew get back to work. Reminder that you can always catch the NetFront if you're listening to us on the on one of your favorite apps, podcast apps, that you can catch our work on the website. A lot of cool videos, a lot of extra content on the website on the digital edition of the Post-Dispatch at stltoday.com. Please do check it out if you haven't checked it out lately. A ton of material there. We appreciate your support. We're continuing to give you the best local journalism we can. And until next time, for Matthew DeFranks, I'm Jeff Gordon. This has been the NetFront. See ya.
Your time and expertise are valuable, making Focus one of the most important resources to have at work. These days, professionals spend nearly half the work week on written communication, and it can be difficult to stay on task with all the emails and documents you have to get through. With Grammarly as your AI writing partner, you can stay focused and quickly get through your work with relevant real-time suggestions wherever you write. It works across 500,000 apps and websites, so it can help with everything from brainstorming presentation ideas to sounding more confident and persuasive in emails and reports. For 15 years, Grammarly has offered best-in-class communication support and enterprise-grade security on a business model that doesn't sell your data. 93% of professionals report that Grammarly helps them get more work done. Download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast.